From strategic direction to emerging opportunities, The Imaging Executive is the podcast with leadership insights and a glimpse at the future of imaging. Now, here's your host, Paul Worthington.
Nikon offers a large frame compact camera. How to capture everything in 3D. 3D duplication made simple. And preventing procrastination. That's all on this episode of The Imaging Executive. Hello, we're glad to have you back with us. I'm Paul Worthington, editor of The Sick Sight Report. This week on our show, it can be normal to procrastinate, but when chronic procrastination starts to affect an employee's mood, performance, and reputation, it's time to take action. Therapist and author Jude Bijou has advice on how to stop procrastinating from your employees or from yourself. In this episode of the Imaging Executive Podcast, she discusses the underlying emotions causing procrastination, tips for staying upbeat while doing a task, and how to fight resistance and lack of motivation. Bijou has more than 30 years working with clients as a licensed therapist, and she's the author of Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint for Building a Better Life. Joining us today is Jude Bijou, a licensed marriage and family therapist and the author of Attitude Reconstruction. Jude, thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Paul.
Today we're talking about how to avoid procrastination and better motivate both yourself and your employees. But first, let's talk about your overall book, Attitude Reconstruction. What's this book about?
Attitude Reconstruction is based on one simple premise, and that is that all of our problems stem back to unexpressed sadness, anger, and fear. And if we just move that energy out of our body physically and constructively, then we've got space to move forward and really live the life we want to live.
Who is the overall intended audience for your book? Is this a general audience or a business book in particular, or is there somebody in mind you had when you wrote this?
Well, the book was written because I knew nobody gave me a manual, and I wanted to know how things worked. And so originally it was for me to get clear, but then as I talk with people and worked with people, it's about families and relationships. It's about work and business and dealing with your employees and dealing with your friends. So it really goes everywhere. It's for everybody. But in particular, it's anybody who wants to make a change.
All right, now tell us a bit about yourself. What's your background and why are you the person to write this book?
Well, I wanted to be happy. And I grew up the daughter of a behavioral child psychologist. And I got so much from that, but something was still missing. And so I went to the East and got involved in meditation. And then as I grew up and started to have my own career as a therapist, those two elements had to come together, the East and the West, both the science and the art. And that's where Attitude Reconstruction was born, was putting those two together in a very practical way so that we can feel more sadness, less sadness, anger, and fear, and more joy, love, and peace in very practical, simple ways. And that's what I wanted to share with people. I got it. It makes sense. There's a blueprint, and that's what anybody can have available.
All right, now let's talk about those practical, simple ways, as you put it, for overcoming procrastination, both in ourselves and in our employees. I know I like to joke that I am a bad procrastinator, and I once bought a book on how to fix that problem, and I never got around to reading it. And then I bought a book on self-discipline, and I couldn't make myself read that one either. So how do we get over those basic problems?
What's holding us back with procrastination is unexpressed emotions, and those emotions are sadness, anger, and fear. And when we realize that they are not something abstract, but they're just pure energy in the body, each feels very different. Sadness feels very down and heavy, and anger striking out, and fear is shaking and shivering and quivering. If we go, I need to move that energy out of my body, then I'm back free, like a kid, back present, because their emotions are not keeping them from doing what they want to do.
Now, how does this apply to a business owner or a manager where their employees, if I got an employee who's just not getting around to doing what I need him to do, I'm not going to become his therapist here and say, express your sadness or fear to me. How can I get around that to get him to do what I need him to do?
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about it first in terms of if it's your own procrastination. I've got to do a project and I'm just not getting around to it. The days are passing and I'm not doing what I really know that I need to do. What do I need to do? And it's like, which of those emotions is it? Am I angry that I have to do this assignment? You know, am I scared that I don't think I can know what I'm doing? Or am I just sad? You know, I just don't feel like I can do it. Once you identify which of those three energies it is, if it's anger, like this fellow who just came in a few days ago, it was anger. He didn't want to do it. He already had enough on his plate. So I had him push that energy up by just pushing against the wall so hard, just making sounds and real hard and fast. And with the bandage, just all that energy into the wall for like literally 2 minutes. And he started laughing and he went, oh, well, I know what I need to do. All right. Oh, yeah. All right. I do have to do this. Oh, yeah, this is the deadline. But in just 2 minutes of honoring that energy and moving it out physically, not yelling and not doing awful things, but just moving that physical energy, because that's all it is, that it shifted his whole attitude. And then he knew what he had to do. And then he could do it.
Well, the first question that comes to mind is you're talking about procrastination or the problem of procrastination being caused by these three energies, as you put it. And my initial reaction is, what if the problem is lack of energy, by which I'd say just laziness? If I'm not doing something, it's not because there's something stopping me. It's just because the energy to do it isn't there.
Yeah, I don't quite buy it. I think that a lot of times what's behind that is maybe some fear. I don't want to spend that amount of time, or maybe it's going to be more complicated than I think, or maybe it's over my head, whatever. But because I would say if it's things like I'd say laziness or the opposite, is oftentimes people feel anxious. You know, we start to not be able to sleep at night and so on. And if that's your problem, then it's shaking and shivering. It's not pushing and moving that hot energy out of anger. It's shaking and shivering like a dog at the vet. And it sounds silly. It sounds crazy. But if you just try it and put on music or whatever, find a safe place and you just up the spine and out the arms and through the legs, it sounds so weird. But again, a minute or two of that, you'll be exhausted for one. But you've just loosened all that energy rather than tightening up. And it's like, oh, okay, what do I need to do? And then you can figure out, well, what is the problem? And what are the little steps to take me to the completion of that project? But you're no longer resisting because the emotions are gone. You're no longer agitated or you're no longer, mad.
So then is the first step always to identify which one of those three emotions is blocking and or not driving you correctly?
That's right. Identify it and then move the energy out, because there's no words. It's just pure energy. And if you have to say anything, you can make sounds. Wow, feels so good. We all want permission to get that out. We feel that. Life's full of frustrations and we have that anger. Or again, that shaking and shivering, just to let it out. And then you're ready to move toward how to take good action, because that's the other part. Now that I'm clear and I'm not encumbered in my head, well, how do I need to set that up? What do I need to do so that I can make a good plan to talk to my employees and figure out how we're going to solve these things so that things are done in a more timely manner?
All right. Now, so that was addressing the issue of I, the manager, the one with the problem. But what if in the workplace I'm doing great and I'm well motivated, but I've got an employee who's just dragging his feet? I can't exactly say to him, hey, shake it off and yell and scream out here on the floor of the store. So what's the approach to take there?
Well, I would probably say, well, because he could definitely shake and shiver, they could do it together, which isn't very practical. But once you try it, you see that it's really like magic, because it shifts the whole energy. But saying that's not your style and you're not interested in doing that. That what we need to do, that because there's a lot of fear in procrastination, what we really need to do is take that big overwhelming problem and divide it into small doable steps. because the fear gets us big and we can't think and we're overwhelmed. And so we've got to go, well, who do I need to call? What kind of research? What are the assignments? This will go for this person and this will go for this person. And what are my deadlines and what do I need to have in there so that everything is all laid out? Because if you do the planning stage, which we just overlook that and just get moving rather than going, all right, let me lay it all out. So then we have, all right, this is all I have to do next. A small, doable step, one thing at a time, because that's going to help us move. I'm no longer trying to look at the whole thing and then waylaying myself with, oh, I'll never get this done. I'm now at, oh, I can do that. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I know how to handle that. Oh, I can tell that person that. Oh, okay, this person really needs to be assigned this and this person that. But it gets clear if we'll take that time, like painting a house, you take that time to do the planning so that then you know exactly what you need to do. And then it's just check them off the list one at a time. And when you falter, shake and shiver a little bit more or pound a little bit more if you need that. Move some emotion if you get stuck. But you can do it because now it's small, doable steps.
Can you tell us some examples, some case studies of how clients of yours have put these ideas into practice in their business?
Well, just recently, another gal came in who couldn't get her staff to like be on time and take care of things in a timely manner. And she did. She had that whole group come in and I gave her some coaching and she, everybody's going to get up and shake and shiver for a few minutes. And actually the whole team did 5 or 6. And then of course, they were laughing and so on. And then they started to have a conversation about what really needed to happen. And people stepped forward and it became a fun thing. Rather than, people dragging their feet.
So we like to leave our listeners with some type of practical idea of what they can do to get started. What would you say is the first step to identifying the problem here? If I've got something I'm not doing, is there a way to tell if it's one of those three emotions, or how do I identify what my first step should be?
That's the first step. Well, first you identify what's the problem. Like I'd say, what's the bad attitude? What am I doing? Am I trashing other people, or am I feeling bad about myself, or feeling needy, or really controlling? Or identify the problem, and then go, I got to get to the emotion behind that, because it's not just the problem. If I deal with the energy, then I have some more flexibility to think more clearly and figure out what to do. But that leads us back to the book, because the book explains exactly how you can use your emotions to move you out of that space and use your thinking to change your thinking so that it supports you. Because that's also a really good part of procrastination, is instead of thinking those old thoughts, we need to think thoughts that are going to be supportive. I can do this. I'll feel better when I'm done. Those kind of thoughts. But it shows how to do that, how to communicate these same principles of how to communicate effectively with employees, absolutely, with peers, with family, with 4 simple rules, and then how to take action by taking these small, doable steps. And all of that is included in the book, Attitude Reconstruction.
Can you tell us what those 4 simple rules are that you just alluded to?
I absolutely can. The first rule is to talk about yourself, that it's really not about what they're doing or they're not doing. As soon as we hear those you's, we're not listening. So talk about yourself, what you need, what's going on for you, how you're feeling about you. First rule. Second rule, be specific. Stay specific. And we have a tendency in your field, in all the business, it's all in specifics, in architecture, in medicine, in law, it's all in specifics. And we need to stay specific in our communication, because when we go big into those generalities and you're not doing this, then again, communication has stopped. So nice specific about what you need and what you see and what's going on for you. The third rule is kindness. Like, look for the solutions, look for what's going to move it forward, not for what's going to keep making the problem bigger. And then praise what the little steps that are going on. So it's I specifics and kindness, the first three rules. And the last rule, I say, is just put on that duct tape and listen. We don't listen enough. Listen to understand, one rule. Altogether, four simple rules.
All right, those four steps all together point out a good path for our audience to make some progress with their against their procrastination. And I was trying for as much alliteration there as I could get in one sentence. We've been speaking to Jude Bijou, therapist and author of Attitude Reconstruction. Jude, thanks very much for your time today.
All right, thanks for that. Absolutely.
Now let's talk about some top photography news. Do you want a better sensor without an interchangeable lens body? New compact cameras can meet your needs. Nikon's new Coolpix A will sell for $1,100, and that's with an APS-C sized sensor. It's three times the size of the sensor in Nikon's interchangeable lens cameras, the mirrorless models, the Nikon One line. This new model is the first compact Coolpix with a large sensor. The 16 megapixel resolution is coupled with an all-glass 18.5mm prime lens, which has an f2.8 aperture. Now, what we've been calling 3D cameras for the last few years are really stereoscopic, not 3D. That is, they capture two side-by-side images, just like your two eyes, and yield an image with more apparent depth than a typical flat 2D photo. While you can see a little bit more of one object or person in a scene by pivoting your viewpoint a little, it's not like you can turn the whole thing around and see it from the other side. No, for that you need a full three-dimensional capture. Real 3D photography has meant two things. A simple camera used to take dozens of shots around an object from all angles, with all those multiple shots combined on a computer into a 3D object that you can manipulate on screen, or using large and expensive cameras or laser scanners that capture in an entire environment with full depth. Now, new startups are promising handheld cameras that will provide the best of both worlds. Austin, Texas-based Lynx is developing a tablet-like 3D camera, and Mountain View, California-based Matterport is capturing full interior spaces with its device. Lynx is raising money on Kickstarter. Matterport has received more than $5 million in venture capital. Matterport says it will help consumers and businesses create accurate photorealistic 3D models quickly, easily, and automatically. Also, its viewing platform will let you see the models and indoor spaces from any web browser. The capture system measures rooms and objects and creates a fly-through video of the 3D model. The final price isn't set, but it will be in the range of what you would invest in a digital SLR, the company says. The camera will be about the size of a lunchbox and weigh about 5 pounds. What else can you do with those 3D models? Well, 3D printing is a confusing term for an increasingly popular technique of using inkjet-like devices that create solid objects from a variety of materials by laying down a thin layer one at a time, building it up until the full form emerges. But before you could print something solid, you would need a 3D model for the device to work from, a computer file showing the underlying geometry. Now, 3D printer MakerBot is expanding from the output side to also address the input part of the equation with a prototype it calls the Digitizer Desktop 3D Scanner. Using lasers and cameras, this device is an innovative way to take a physical object, scan it, and create a digital file, the company says, letting anyone without design, CAD software, or 3D modeling experience make a 3D model and then print the item again and again on a MakerBot replicator. Now, 3D scanners aren't new, but they've been pricey industrial devices. While pricing wasn't announced, MakerBot says its hardware will be aimed at consumers, and adds that the digitizer will be a great tool for archiving, prototyping, replicating, and digitizing models, parts, artifacts, artwork, sculptures, clay figures, jewelry, anything. If something gets broken, you can just print it again. And that's our show for this week. Our thanks to you for listening once again. We look forward to talking with you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Imaging Executive. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, you can email us at aie@pmai.org. For more information on the Association of Imaging Executives, visit pmai.org/AIE.